they realize that when I get Andre the Giant cinched up in the launch position, when I slam him through the Trump Plaza, brother, from New York down to Tampa, Florida, the fault line is going to break off. And as Andre the Giant falls into the ocean, so will Donald Trump and all the Hulkamaniacs. But as Donald Trump hangs onto the top of the Trump Plaza with his family under his other arm, as they sink to the bottom of the sea, thank God Donald Trump's a Hulkamaniac. He'll know enough to let go of his materialistic possessions, hang on to the wife and kids, dog paddle with his life all the way to safety.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
But Donald, if something happens, you run out of gas, and all those little Hulkamaniacs run out of gas, just hang on to the largest back in the world, and I'll dog paddle us, backstroke all of us to safety.
Oh, and thank you, Hulk Hogan. Let's get back to action. Wow.
Unreal, Donald Trump, one of the Hulkamaniacs.
There he is right there, a Hulkamaniac. You really think so?
Absolutely.
Maybe I should join Twitter.
You should, man. It's a hub of conspiracy. It's a hub of contemporary conspiracy. I'll say that for sure.
But you only get a certain number of characters to express a thought, right? That truly is a fragmented way of doing things.
Yeah, but it's good for, like, news collection and shit and getting the website I'd recommend, and a lot of people will roll their eyes if they know of it and don't like it, is, like, Palmer Report. He essentially combs Twitter and picks up all their leads. And then runs them out there on the internet. And a lot of them are like, oh, I can't even think of them off the top of my head, but they're just sort of like, there's indictments that are sealed, but have Trump's name on it, and they're waiting for the go-ahead to release it or something like that. They'll say shit like that, where everyone gets all excited, and then nothing kind of happens. Or they'll say, you know, but then there are other times where it's like, they'll be like, I talked to a couple people, and Flynn's definitely working with the FBI. And then it came out like a few weeks later that he was working with the FBI or something. So it's like they have hits and they have misses, but you're never quite sure what it is, you know.
Okay. So they're like antenna, you know. They're kind of feeling the landscape, and yeah, well, you know, that's a kind of a model of thought organization I've had for a long time. Bulletin board, you know. If you take that source and other sources and you just keep putting, you know, there's a fact you want to follow, and you just keep pinning different sources and what they say about them, and then eventually they get a big picture. So,
that's what Twitter is essentially. Yeah, I mean, I mostly use it to like harass my local weather lady, essentially. Cause like everybody who's in the media has to be on Twitter. So, you know, she'll post the forecast and I'll be like, what the fuck is that all about? You know, and I know she read it, so so I don't think I'm that ideal. The president and I probably aren't their ideal. Well, what do you think of that whole thing that he's used this? That he's like Alex Jones with the bullhorn, man. It's gone full circle in a sense. Like his whole thing is to broadcast on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, speaking of fragmented consciousness, it's kind of like short attention span theater, though, right? And he and most of what he tweets is wrong, right? As I recall.
What he tweets is what?
Is wrong, factually wrong.
Oh, it runs the gamut. I mean, he just lashes out at people. Like, I don't know if you saw, he got into like a fight with some morning hosts on Twitter.
Oh yeah, right. Well, yeah, that's, yeah.
I mean, he uses it, I think, to like shape the conversation of the country. It's like kind of amazing in a way, because like he'll get on.
But
I was joking with Adam Gorelick, him saying, this guy's saying so much crazy shit and throwing so much shit against the wall to get people talking about shit. Maybe we will get that UFO disclosure we wanted all this time. Like he could be the disclosure president just to change the conversation, like, permanently.
Let me interject here real quick. What's going on with Adam Gorelick? I haven't, you know, he's one of my favorite people. He's actually been here in my house. But I haven't
seen him
online.
He's been in my house, too.
Yeah. In some ways, he gets around, but I haven't seen him online in a long, long time.
I feel like I'm going to sound like an old man now. He's on the Twitter. He's on Twitter.
He's a twit. Okay.
Yeah,
right.
He's a voracious tweeter. I hope he's listening right now, because we're talking about him, and I'm sure he'll get excited. But, yeah, he's all over Twitter, man.
Adam, get back on your meds, man. and write longer things like book instead of just tweeted notes.
He's a big-time tweeter, that's for sure. Yeah. I'll let him know. I'll see if I can. I'll tweet him while we talk. But yeah, he left us on Facebook and moved over to Twitter. I agree in a sense. I mean, you can write more on Facebook, but it's just a cesspool nowadays, man.
Yeah, well, you know, you can only blow so much, you know. Then I guess we're dinosaurs from being on Facebook at all, really, anymore. But in order for me to really get something out of the experience, I have to eventually create a book or a magazine or something. Just, you know, just the thoughts that appear in my head. I don't need to broadcast every single thing that first enters my brain. What is that called?
I don't know. Well, I was joking with somebody a few weeks ago where it's like this Facebook thing is anytime anything happens in the world, you have to issue a statement. You know, you have to go on Facebook and be like, oh, David Bowie died. So sad. You know, like, and if you don't, it's like people think you're an asshole. why does the world need my opinion on, you know, the fact that Davy Jones died? Like, yeah, we're all sad. We don't need to, you don't need me to chime in.
This has been a big thing about Facebook has always tried to manage people's thoughts. Like, for instance, they always list people's birthdays. I never respond to that. I never wish anybody a birthday. But, and also the blow-off button. You know, people can read your shit and not really think about it or do anything about it. They can just press a like button.
Yeah.
You don't even know if they're moving or not.
Right.
You know, so it's in a way, it really has been a way to fragment consciousness. And it's for, what is that thing that you have to give kids meds for?
Oh, like ADD?
ADD, yes. see what it's done to my consciousness? I can't even think of ADD anymore.
Well, yeah, I mentioned that on the show in a sense last week, where it's like the fact that you can block people and people filter their whole sense of reality through these social media networks is why we have this fragmented reality, I think. Because I can go through the whole day without even hearing the opinion of someone who's on Donald Trump's side because I've managed to get rid of all of them from my online life. And it's like, that's not, I'll be the first to admit, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, it's not a good thing, right? Yeah, you don't want to be in a vacuum in a tunnel. You don't want to just you don't want your Facebook just to be your mirror. You know, how are you going to learn and grow from that?
Yeah, well, I agree.
The only thing I require is a simple bit of articulation. You know, I mean, if somebody is pissed off about something I said, tell me why. Don't just sit there and call me an apple.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, for sure. That's.
I want to know what you think, and I want to change my opinion if you have a point, you know? But that kind of, which to me is common sense discourse, it seems to be totally absent, and I think it is partly because people have got ADD out there, you know? They need to shout at each other, but they don't think they're being heard. And then, you know, and no matter what you say, they're all to another topic anyway.
Well, part of it is, and it's getting worse by the day and everything. It's like the opinions are hardening. And it's like I said before, it's like these dueling conspiracy theories. And there's nothing people can agree on. It's really
right.
Nothing they can agree on. It's like,
well, because so much of it, like I said, is a false dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to agree on either side. They're both fucked. You know?
Yeah.
So the idea, and it's always been the challenge. It's actually the whole point of, you know, when we were doing zines, and the whole point of alternative publishing and all sort of stuff is to think for yourself, come up with your own answers, and then put them out there, you know, not just shouting at each other, but actually thinking about it and producing a body of work, you know. I mean, I used to know dozens of people like that, you know, who could actually write books, and you could talk in extended conversations with them. I don't know anybody like that anymore. They all, you know.
Well, you know me, so we'll start with that. You have one.
Yeah, there we go. There you go. But, you know, like I said,
you can call
like
me anytime, Ken.
But seriously, many, many great resources have gone, and it should be.
Oh, absolutely.
Now. Yeah. Don Judge passed away. Acharya S. Did you know Acharya?
I knew of Atreya, but I never had the chance to interview, do an interview.
He wrote the Christ Conspiracy.
It was on sort of like my wish list type of guest, but I never got around to it.
Yeah. And for many years, she worked that side of the street. She was an ally that way. Sherman Skolnick.
I was going to mention, hey, man, like I said, I have almost nothing in my notes, but Sherman Skolnick is actually in the notes because I loved Sherman Skolnick.
He was up in Chicago. I used to visit him all the time.
Oh.
Dinner with him all the time. There's nobody like that out there now.
Oh, no, not at all.
It's
funny. I can empathize, man, because it's like, I've been doing this show for 10 years, and I joke with the audience. I said, because I took the last week off, July 4th, I was going to do a clip show, but I never got around to it. But the plan had been to, like, do an episode where we pull clips from, like, all the guests that we've lost over the years. And it's like, the list is staggering in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It really is. It's like, a lot of folks in this field, I don't know. I don't think it's a conspiracy, per se. I just think it's like...
demographics.
Yeah, it's a weird demographic.
A lot of the talent in the baby boom generation is, you know, we're just getting to the end of things, you know. I've got health issues myself, you know. And that's okay, you know, we all have to move on. But it sure would be nice in my dotage if some newer, younger people with some fresh ideas started getting active and doing something, other than being involved in Twitter wars and insulting each other on Facebook. I don't know.
Yeah, well.
Is that a lot to ask for?
Well, part of it is, like, I think that the medium's changed, you know? It's as the 80s were like the zines and shit, and it's like the 90s and the aughts were the blogs, you know? Mm-hmm. By the middle of the aughts to now, is sort of podcasts and video, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's just the medium has changed in a tremendous way, where it's like, if you want to get into the where things are at right now, it's like you got to listen to podcasts or watch videos, because people aren't writing. I mean, they're writing, believe me, there's a lot of good writers out there. Joshua Cushion, my buddy's working on some really good stuff. It's like, but they're kind of few and far between, you know what I mean?
Right. I remember there used to be a zine called Amusing Ourselves to Death. That was a zine. You know, multiply that by, you know, factor of 60 billion, and you've got Facebook.
Well, like, think about it. I mean, to make a zine back then, you had to, like, print it out. You had to do a lot of manual labor. Like, I don't know if that's called manual labor, actually, but it's...
You're talking to a guy who used to get his zine published, had to drive out to a printer and pick up all the copies and package them all up and send them out to like a dozen different distributors around the country. Then had to keep track of, you know, they would the copies they didn't sell, they'd tear off the top third of the cover and send it back, or they'd send an affidavit. You know, and then subscriber copies, you had to go to the post office and get a permit. It was a total mess. It's sad that those days are gone.
Oh, no, for sure, yeah. But even the written word is going away. What's funny, it's not, you know, anyone who's listening that thinks we're being like old man conspiratorial, it's Fox Sports 1, the website, which is like the number two to ESPN, they got rid of all their writers, and they're turning themselves into a sports video website. And that's the way life is going. It's really part of it is like people, you know, there's like fucked up social engineering at work, Kat. It scares me sometimes, you know. It's people are on their phones. It's like I remember like 5 or 6 years ago seeing a commercial where it was like, you know, sign up for the cable company, you get super fast internet, you can watch your shit anywhere, you can watch a movie on your phone. And I'm like, who would ever want to watch a movie on a tiny little phone? And it's like, I'll watch a 2-minute video, but, you know, there are younger people than me, more tolerant, patient people than me, who are probably watching, like, the latest movies on their phone. It's bizarre. It's really, that changes civilization, folks.
A lot of them have pads, and, you know, that's kind of a total. And of course, you know, if you actually go to a movie theater, the screens at the movie theaters are smaller and smaller, whereas, you know, the screens on your television in your living rooms are larger and larger.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of reason to go out. But you know, I just spent some time visiting my friend David Hatchett Childress, the guy who published the book. You know, the book, Apocalypse Now, which is what we're talking about, people.
Yes,
I published by Adventures Unlimited Press. And David still does. Do you know Childress at all?
I know of him. He's another. We sort of, you and I run in concentric circles. So
right.
We have a few folks.
Yeah. He's a TV star. He's on an Ancient Alien show all the time. But I've known him for many years, and he still publishes a catalog, a book catalog. And, you know, he does a number of books every year, and he actually still publishes the books, and he warehouses them. And he's got this marvelous little place in rural Illinois, in Kempton, Illinois, and he sells books that way.
Yeah.
And most people, I've been talking to somebody else, but I'm trying to, you know, I'm sussing around. I used to be published by like a half a dozen different people because there were that many small presses that were interested in my work. And so now there's David, basically. And I've been talking to another person who apparently keeps 500 titles. He's got these books, and some of them are like old UFO books from the 50s. And he's got them all scanned and available in PDF copies. And I assume he's got this online, all these 500 titles. He doesn't print up a print run of the books and warehouse them. He doesn't sell that many copies of any individual book, but he has 500 titles, and it's all on demand. You order the book, and they make the book when you order it.
Right, right.
And so, I mean, some of the things that are removed from that process is the simple joy of going to your bookstore or your bookstore cafe, your coffee shop, and browsing books and, seeing what's out there. It's just, you know, it's a targeted audience, but it's another way of reaching people. So I might experiment with that with my next book.
Yeah. Well, that's how it is now. And it's good, I guess, because you've written a million books. So you can maybe have an opinion on this in a sense where it's like now there was a process to write a book in a sense. Like you had to actually get someone to publish it. Now that you can self-publish, more people can – it's ironic because you're saying not many people are writing enough. But in a sense, other people can write. Whether they should or not, that's up for debate. But
but the economics of it is different. I mean, when you write for a publisher, they pay you in advance and you get royalties.
Right, exactly.
And when you do it this other way, you're making your money one book at a time. You're getting a bigger percentage of the cover price, but you're not selling near as much. And also part of the whole job has always been you got to go out and promote it. You know, that's the other thing that's been a bane to my existence is the dropping off of conferences. You know, there used to be a conspiracy conference that I went to every year in somewhere in California, L.A. or San Francisco. It changed a lot. That is still called Conspiracy Con. It doesn't happen anymore. There's still a lot of UFO conferences out there, but
more Bigfoot conferences and ghost conferences now.
Yeah. And I used to, one thing I used to get flown over to England all the time to talk to the 14 Times people. I think that magazine still exists, but
yeah, it's still around.
Yeah, but when it was run by Paul Sievekin and Bob Ricard, actually one of the times that I went over there, I went there when they discovered Charles Fort's apartment. Right around the corner from the British Museum, which is now it's a plaque there, and it's like
nice.
For that moment. But that doesn't happen anymore. I'm all dressed up and nowhere to go. I've got presentation. It's very interesting. The last presentation that I did was in L.A., and I was at the time I was talking about synchronicities and coincidences and how that relates to conspiracies. It was just really the beginning of my study of the self phenomena. And what is very interesting about that is that it was the whole affair was arranged by Skylar Alfagren. Do you know Skylar?
I another person. I know, actually, I do. I have exchanged messages with Skylar. I've been trying to get her on the show forever, but she's blown me off a million times. So
if she's listening to this,
Skylar, this is the last chance to get on with All of America. This is the last season. So if you want to be a part of the collection, get your ass in gear and get in touch. Otherwise, you'll show up on the next show, and you'll never be able to brag about the fact that you were on this exclusive club.
Well, she's absolutely fabulous. I hope you do get her on. But she set this up. She set me up at the Cecil Hotel to stay there when I, and she made all the arrangements.
That's
for
where that girl disappeared.
That's what I'm getting to.
Nice.
I met that girl. I was that night. I'm here to talk about coincidences, right? This is my talk of this thing that this guy has set up. And I met Eliza Lamb. I sat across
what
from her at breakfast.
What the fuck? Are you serious?
I sat across from her from breakfast. There's a bookstore next to the Cecil.
Have you
the
told
Lamb.
This story before?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
wow.
I mean,
I've never heard this story. This blows my mind because I've heard about this story forever.
Yeah.
I've looked into it, but I did not – I never heard that there – This is Ken. My fucking mind has just exploded. Okay, so you met this girl.
How I felt about it.
Holy shit! This is wild. Okay, let's slow down now. I need to pick my jaw off the fucking floor. Oh my god. Okay, so you were there. You came up. They brought you out to California for a thing, and you were at the Cecil Hotel.
At the suggestion of Skyler, Skyler who has a dark sense of humor. The Cecil had a reputation as a ghost hotel. A number of murders were committed there. There was a commons area there where everybody had breakfast in the morning, and I sat across from Eliza Lamb because I remember that, you know, when the news hit, it was like a week or so later after I left that it all came out that she disappeared, and I saw the video of her in, you know, doing these weird things in the elevator. And I recognized her immediately because I'd also seen her at the, like I said, there's a bookstore right next to the Cecil called the Last Bookstore.
Wow.
And she was in as well. So.
Did you talk to her at all or fucking?
No.
I mean, I'm sure, honestly, it's probably like one of those things where it's someone who almost got on the plane on 9/11. You know, you really have insight into like what actually happened, but you were there when it happened.
You know, I remember she was kind of hot, you know, so.
Hey, yeah, that's why you remember her.
I remember that, right?
Right. That's unbelievable. That is really fucking strange. Wow.
It is. Well, the whole phenomenon, like I said, I've got this whole talk now about coincidences and synchronicities. It's one of the few ways of communicating to people what an unreal experience is like. Like if you've ever actually seen a real UFO or if you've dropped a lot of acid.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you try to explain that to somebody. There's no real concrete way of doing it. But if somebody has experienced a weird set of synchronicities and not just coincidences, then, you know, you can almost get across the idea. I mean, it has a long, interesting history. Synchronicities used to be called seriality. And the guy that actually identified the phenomenon was a guy named Paul Kammerer, who was known in the history of science as a guy who tried to propagate an alternative to Darwinian evolution called the inheritance of acquired characteristics. Arthur Kessler wrote a book about this.
Yeah.
It's kind of discredited, although it's the basis of all Soviet science, but the appendix to that book that he wrote about that is all about the reality. Like when he would commute to work, he would make notes of everybody who carried a red umbrella, everybody who, you know, wore their hair this way or, had this kind of shoe on or said this thing. He would note how many things were synchronous. You know, so Carl Jung was the guy who changed the idea from seriality to synchronicity. But like I said, Arthur Kessler, one of the great writers of the 50s, did a whole standard study of this thing.
Yeah.
So that's where I was going with my lecture about coincidences.
And then you were there for like one of the world's most recent famous bizarre mysteries.
Like I said, it's like dropping acid, right?
Yeah. That's absolutely. Like I said, I'm still kind of stunned. I'm like, whoa, that's really weird. You know, like I don't know what to say. I wish you had like talked to her so you could also have that claim to fame. But just seeing her is good enough. Wow, that is so.
Well, you know,
did you notice any commotion like while you were there? Like, because I assume she disappeared. While you were there, like, did you notice any, like, any,
no.
You know, furfural in the...
No, I recognized who she was. I thought, you know, all those weird hand gestures that she does in the elevator video, I had no idea what that was all about. I didn't see her with anybody, although she seems to go out of that elevator and talk to somebody or meet with somebody or that there's somebody else there. I saw none of that. I should also mention that prior to that... Skyler found herself like, I think 10 or 15 minutes outside of Sandy Hook right when all that was happening.
Wow, that's weird too.
Yeah. So she gets dragged in some cool incidences. I mean, this goes on and on. I used to, when I traveled more and lectured more, whenever I go into the hotel, I would turn on the CNN news, the national news, and there'd be a story about the place where I was staying, you know. But it was a national news; it wasn't like a local broadcast. That would happen time and time again.
Well,
you know,
Robert
Anton Wilson goes on at length about this, you know, the whole law of 23s. Have you ever read Robert Anton Wilson?
Yeah, on and off, yeah. Yeah, a lot of my crew is into that shit. I'm thinking what you're saying rings a bell in a somewhat of a way, the synchronicities and stuff, because when I was a part of this conference here in Massachusetts in was like a double connection in a sense, but I was part of a UFO paranormal convention here in Mass, and Nick Redfern and Peter Robbins came into town, and I got them at the airport. And that was the very day, the very moment that the balloon boy happened. Do you remember Balloon Boy?
It was
a UFO balloon that went up, and they weren't sure if there was a boy, a little kid inside or not. And it
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, and it captivated the car. It's like an OJ car chase. where they were like, there's a balloon, it could have a little kid inside, you know, we're watching it with our traffic helicopters, oh, what a tragic thing, you know, and it turned out he wasn't even in the balloon. But that all went down as I was getting those guys at the airport. And then, to sort of like connect it then to another weird thing, is that the event was held in Watertown, Mass., which is where they caught the Boston bomber hiding in a boat. So there's two weird synchronicities like around that weekend of like kind of what you're talking about, where it's like somehow it connects to like a big story, not one of those things where it's like, oh, you know, I'm having a tuna fish sandwich and my cat loves tuna fish, so it must be, you know, this is like a pretty massive sort of synchronicity.
Right.
Very weird.
So what was the event? Why was Peter there?
Oh, it was some UFO like.
Was he lecturing on Reich? You know, that's.
No. He was doing Rendlesham. This was like 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Nick was doing, I think, Bigfoot or Chupacabra or one of those creatures. Yeah.
Well,
it was a good time. It was too bad it went under, but you know how these
things Peter has a connection with Ellsworth Baker, who was a great disciple of Wilhelm Reich, and Peter himself is a great expert on Reich and Reich's later years involved in UFO activity.
Yeah. Interesting.
You've had Peter on your show, I take it, right?
What's that?
You've had Peter on your show?
Oh, yeah, a million times. Well, not a million, but enough.
So what is the deal? This is your last show? I don't get it. What's going on?
No. It's my last season.
This is your last season? Okay.
I do it.
Why is that? Are you retiring early?
No, I want to morph into something else. I want to do something differently. Different,
uh-huh.
You know what I mean? It's like everyone has a podcast now, so I should be doing something different, you know?
Right.
Look at man, Dylan. Well, this is a perfect segue into Dylan, actually. Dylan talk, because it's like, you know, my hero and idol and you know, faux god is Dylan. So it's like the man went from covers to sort of folky originals to rock and roll to whatever the Rolling Thunder review was, like sort of like almost like a weird. So I don't even know what you call it. An awesome. That's my favorite period is the Rolling Thunder review.
Commedia dell'arte is what it's called.
What's that?
Commedia dell'arte.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. And sort of like folk revival. I don't know. It wasn't a folk revival, but it was I don't know, like a vaudevillian show. You know, that period. Then he went Christian. Then he went, you know, 80s. And then, you know, he may evolve. That's what I want to do. You know, I've been doing 10 years of this sort of like weekly, semi-weekly podcast. I want to do something different, you know, and that's kind of the idea. So.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I'd love to find out what that is when you figure out what it is. What different can you do?
I'm kicking around ideas, man. You know, I started the podcasting thing back before anybody else did, before it was called podcasting.
Yeah.
So it's like now everybody has a podcast. You know,
okay. Break some new ground, dude. Take me with you.
Hey, man, you'll be please. You kidding me? You'll be, you know, if you'll get on board the ship, brother, I'll fucking have you anytime. You know that.
You know, Dylan's a Reichian too, right? Do you know the line that Dylan has about Reich?
No, which one?
You know, Joey from Desire? He's talking about Joey Gallo. Spent 10
oh, okay,
years
yeah.
Spent 10 years in Attica reading Nietzsche and Wilhelm Reich. They threw him in the hole one time, trying to stop a strike.
Nice.
He's been bombed in an Oregon box, right?
he's the man, dude. I was...
So what do you think about this latest stuff? You know, I'm disappointed that you never sent me your list.
I was kind of like all fired up about it one night, and I was tweeting about it and mentioned like I should, like I might start tweeting my favorite Dylan lyrics on the tweet stream or whatever. But then I kind of like never got around to it. But yeah, it's the new stuff. I'm not a huge fan of like this new period of him doing covers and shit of standards. Like I'd rather
American
him write original stuff.
American songbook. Yeah, well, I love his writing too. But I was that last album that he did of original songs. What was it? Begins with a T.
All I know is that the last album of original songs had what I think is like in my like you said, it's hard to pick five favorites. But I would put this like in my own personal like current top 10. That's what I think I like about Dylan is like you can listen to some songs and then all of a sudden you'll be like, you know, I haven't listened to Blonde on Blonde like in years. Let me pull that one out and listen. Then you're like, oh, I forgot about how fucking good this song is. You know? So the new album, that like epic Titanic song is, I think it's one of his very fucking best. I think it's like one of the very best songs he ever wrote. I think it's that good. It is absolutely breathtaking.
You know, that's a reworking of a kind of a standard folk tune, right? That's not a totally original tune.
Yeah, but I mean, he put his own sort of like...
Why can't I remember? That's the last album of original material he did. I can't remember the title of the song of the album. But the thing that I found interesting about that album...
Are those sirens in the background I hear?
Yeah, it looks like...
That's a tribute to Greg Bishop. He has sirens in the back of his show all the time. So.
Yeah, I'm hoping it doesn't trigger off the dogs.
Oh,
but anyway, Dylan's voice on that last album of original stuff was really, I mean, for somebody who defends his voice, I think he's the greatest singer ever, really. I thought on that album he was really getting into some rough territory. But now this American Songbook stuff, the Frank Sinatra covers and all that stuff, he's back to like, you know, his crooner voice.
Yeah.
So my concerns for his health have improved a bit. But I love this new stuff. I mean, it's almost perfect for me, old guy trying to retire early.
There you go. Yeah.
Kind of fits my mood.
Well, I it's just that, like the last there was like a trio of like original albums that came out before these American Standards, or however they're called, and those, at least each of those albums had like three or four good, really, really good songs. You know, I'm thinking like Summer Days, Tweedledee-Dee and Tweedledee-Dum. That one's really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of really good songs. I'd have to look at that. If I could see like the actual playlist on those, I'd be able to pull out like five or six where I'm just like, those are great songs.
Yeah. Well, you know, my favorite period is the Christian period.
Really.
I've kind of identified myself as, and bringing this back to my book, you know, the book opens up with a quote from Leonard Cohen, whose religious period is also one that I think is great. When people ask me my religion, I tell them I'm a Leonard Cohen. Sometimes I say a Bob Dylan, but I'm usually a Leonard Cohen Christian, because Leonard Cohen was a Jew who became a Buddhist. You know, and this is another great favor that Greg Bishop did for me. When I visited him one time, we went out to Mount Baldy, where Leonard Cohen studied Buddhism with Buddhist monks at the Mount Baldy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that was great. But I think both those guys have a real... I mean, when it comes to Christianity in this country, we think of fundamentalist preachers and Jerry Falwell and kind of backward thinking. But I think that, if you listen to these guys, they have a different idea about it that is one that, you know, no matter how... unhip you might think being a Christian either. You might come up with a, you know, a different idea about it if you listen to them.
Yeah. No, I mean, the songs are good. I mean, don't get me wrong. I guess that people used to complain, though, that he would sermonize between the songs and shit. Wasn't that the big complaint about sort of like that period that, like, if you went to see him?
Right. But how often does that happen? You know, you go to a rock show, they do the record, and then they're gone. Dylan would stop a show, you know, he'd start a Christian song, and people would boo. And he'd say, you know, then he'd turn the lights on, and he'd start telling, you know, start preachifying about Armageddon.
Well, you know something, it's funny you say that because when you responded to what I mentioned, I thought to myself, I've seen him live now like 7 or 8 times, and my only fucking complaint was like that he never said a word to the audience.
Is that right?
You know?
Believe me, dude,
I would love to sit there and, in retrospect, you know, I said, people were pissed about that, but now that I think about it, it's like, fuck, man, I would give anything to be at one of those concerts, to hear what kind of crazy shit he was saying. Who knows, you know? If the man's fucking genius, we should listen to whatever he was saying between the songs.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've seen Dylan dozens and dozens of times, right? Which probably one of my earliest zine efforts. I helped produce a magazine called Talking Bob Zimmerman Blues.
Nice.
Yeah.
In case people haven't noticed, we've entered the Dylan stage of the show. So let's plug because we're getting near the end. I want to keep talking to you if you don't mind after the hour. So not off the air. We'll keep the show going. I mean, so. And I'll give you a heads up. You're like 9 minutes left. But the book is Trumpocalypse now, and people can get it through Amazon, or they can contact Ken, and Ken can be found on Facebook, Ken Thomas, Ken with two N's, K-E-N-N, Thomas, Steam Shovel Press, and that'll pull him up, I think. So that should be you'll be able to get in touch with him. Get the book, folks. It's really good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And like Ken said, it has the feel... In a sense, it has a feel of a time capsule, but in the same sense, it's like there's nothing really out there right now that could serve as sort of like the jumping-off point for people who are, like, looking at the current situation in the world right now and being like, how the fuck did we get here and what the fuck is going on? That's what this book pretty much strives to explain, you know? It's like, this is where this guy came from, this is how he got elected, and here's all the shit that we don't know quite yet. And so it's excellent. And as someone who's a huge student of this Trumpocalypse, I highly recommend the book. And I have a question for you though. Somebody asked. This is the value of Twitter. Because Adam Go Rightly, I've been exchanging. He says I said that Ken thinks you disappeared because you know you're not on Twitter any. You're not online anymore. He put wrong. Like so you don't need all the characters. You just need to get the point across. And then I said I told Ken you should get on Twitter, and he retweeted that. And I looked on his thing, and somebody had a great question. This is a perfect question for a legal. If Trump goes to jail, does he still get Secret Service protection?
Well, you know, the thing is, he will never go to jail. He'll do what Nixon did. He'll resign before being impeached.
In exchange for, like, a pardon, you think?
Yes,
I think I'm starting to think my money is on... I'm starting to think my money is on he's going to resign for health reasons, quote-unquote, and say that he's getting sick or something, and try They'll sort of give him and his whole family somehow a blanket like pardon. That's my concern, but I think I don't know. It's hard to speculate.
I'm just curious about how he's going to spin it, because no matter what he does, he has to define it as some kind of great success for him.
A win has to be a win. Yeah.
Right. So he made America great for a week and a half, as he decided to receive his shiny.
Yeah. Well, I could see him going. Listen. You know, after I got back from whatever trip, I checked with my doctor, and they said that, you know, I'm ill with this or that, and I need to take time away to take care of myself, and so I'm resigning. It's my theory. I don't know. You know, and then they'll be like, then it'll be like, oh, he's dying, dude. You can't just leave him alone. He's dying, and leave his family alone, and that'll be it. And he'll die, like, you know, in 2 or 3 years. Or fade away somehow.
Yeah, that sounds like, actually, what is he, 70 years old and a very indulgent lifestyle?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we don't really know what
the health problem is. Like, look what happened with Reagan. He left office and disappeared for like a decade. It'll be like one of those things. He'll be like, God, that'll spawn conspiracy theories. It'll be like, oh, people still go and see him, but he's in a wheelchair and he's in a vegetative state. No, he's not. He's still coherent. He knows what's going on. He was forced out of office. It's like, this guy is going to be a conspiracy factory no matter what happens.
That's a good point. Yeah, he would even turn a resignation into some selling point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. And like I said earlier, the fucked up part is when the election was going down, it was like, hey, it would be interesting to see what would happen. Now, like I said, now we've bought the ticket to the show, man. We're in the show. We're going to find out what happens. And it's like, this is not good.
That's the deal. I mean, once he goes, the spectacle is in our hands, right? And since there's no leadership anywhere else, we don't know what's going to happen. So I think it's a perfect moment, perfect opportunity for people to get creative and, you know, in ways that I probably can't even imagine. But it's a, you know, we can turn a page here, you know. This could be the end, you know. We could start bombing North Korea tomorrow and start a, you know, global Armageddon. Short of that, it might be an opportunity for something new to happen. So I'm optimistic, you know. I'm Timothy Leary optimistic. There's another guy who's been gone for too long.
Yeah.
Tune in, turn on, and take it where it's going to go. Take it where you can take it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, like I said, it's like we're on the plane, man. We don't really have any choice on what's going to happen, so...
Yeah,
let's hope for the best.
Fine.
I like to think, I'm sure you've given this some thought over the years. It's like, I was joking when he first got inaugurated, like, about what he knows about, what they told him about UFOs. But the more I think about it, and Stan Friedman said something that really gave me pause in the sense that it's like, especially with regard to Trump, where he was like, the need to know thing isn't just like that you don't need to know. It's that, like, we're protecting the secret from your own, from you. So, like, unless it's an absolute need to know about whatever the secret is, you know, we can't tell you because you might tell other people. And it's like, that's definitely, like, what they would think with Trump. Like, there's no way they would tell him about the UFO phenomenon. Or, like, go, aliens are real. Like, you cannot trust him with that information whatsoever, and I'm sure whoever knows the answer, if there are people in the government that do, definitely came to that conclusion.
Yeah, he would Twitter it out, right?
What's that?
Yeah, he would Twitter it out. What was that?
Oh, that's a British lady who tells us that the show is almost over, but we're going to talk past the...
Let me make a point, though. That's when Trump decided to run for president, right after Obama... said something about Roswell.
Oh, really? Well, I know he decided to run for president after Obama, like, ripped on him at the thing. That's what people point to as the... Well, that's the other thing we're going to go right over the hour, folks. So thanks to all the live folks who are listening, and enjoy the remainder of the show when it's available on MP3. Ken and I, thank you for joining us. I probably lost, like, I don't know, 15% of my audience forever because I did this show, but I don't go fuck because they should wake up by now and know what the fuck is going on, dude. It's like not even, you know. I'm open to the idea that like, there's two conspiracies running concurrently here, folks. It's like there's the Trump work with Russia conspiracy, then, like, someone who orchestrated Trump to work with Russia, who is even more... You know, that's the big bad guy of this story, maybe. You know what I'm saying? It's like this shit goes deeper than, you know. It's like that old expression. It's like the government has science that's like a generation ahead. It's like the real conspiracy is a generation ahead of what we're talking about right now, folks. So, you know, maybe that's what we should be trying to figure out. You there, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm still here. that weird lady is.
Right.
Well, you know, I tried to make the point before that the book does contain some pro-Trump points of view.
Absolutely.
Like Thierry Nifon, who's a French writer.
Oh,
who's,
yeah, talk about Thierry Nifon, because I saw that part of the book, and I was like,
right,
that was
right.
One of the more, I should have put that in the notes. That's one of the more enlightening parts of the book.
He was like one of the first people to come up with 9/11 conspiracy theories. You know, he was famous for that. But his idea was that Michael Flynn was hired to reform the CIA.
Right.
And so he goes on at length about how Michael Flynn was actually, you know, his whole purpose was to go in there and to root out corruption. And of course, he's like the center of the corruption scandal.
Right.
And what's interesting about this is that appeared in Nexus magazine. Are you familiar with Nexus?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, Duncan Rhodes is a friend of mine. And Nexus is a great magazine. It's been around for a long time. It's an alternative medicine thing on New Age stuff.
I try to limit my reading to Mad.
Well, that's where you find the truth.
Yeah, exactly. talk about a throwback joke. We'll see how many people in the audience get that one.
But if there was a mouthpiece for Russia Today or for the Russian intelligence agencies, it was Nexus.
Yeah.
They're the ones that published Thierry Nifon and kind of the pro-Trump stuff, which I find fascinating. You know, I'm always fascinated when New Age kind of hippy dippy type publications glom on to something that's kind of fascistic like Trump.
Well, you know, there's a whole school of people at least in the UFO community and other parts, I think, that are like, think that his whole purpose of being is to upset the globalist agenda, which makes perfect sense to me, but at the same time, it's like, this is our best. It was, to me, it was like a Sophie's choice from the beginning, where it was like, if this guy represents the best chance to upset the globalist agenda, like, I'll become a globalist, dude. Like, it makes more sense. It makes, you know, why would we elect an inept buffoon to fucking upend the globalist agenda, you know? It's like a genius.
Well, you know,
what's that?
I prefer the term military-industrial complex to globalist agenda, because, you know, if there's a globalist agenda, it's globalist financiers and entrepreneurs like Trump.
Yeah.
In fact, that's probably what this scandal is about. That the sanctions that we put against Russia for invading the Ukraine have cut into his businesses. You know, he's got all these Russian ties that he can't develop because of his sanctions, and so that's why he's working with the Russians to get the sanctions lifted. That's just turning out to be harder than he expected it to be.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that, yeah, the whole point, the whole deal was he gets elected, they help him out, and he gets he takes down the sanctions. They said he was trying to do it, like within the first few days he was inaugurated.
Yeah,
it's
his whole reason on death row. His whole, you know, his whole reason for doing it in the first place. It's all about his greed. His bottomless greed. You know, it's like the richest, most powerful man in the world, and that's not enough.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, listen, man, we're in agreement on this. It's insane that, you know, it's like this, he's actually just, he has no loyalty. Anyone who's, you know, he has no loyalty to the fucking country. Like, whatever it would take to win the election, he did, you know. And as fucked up as it is, there are people who say, well, you know, they hate Hillary Clinton so much that they'll say, well, what difference does it make? You know, whatever it takes to win the election. But it's like, I don't know, man. That's a bridge I can't cross.
Well, it does kind of show you where his heart lies, you know, where his loyalties are to his pocketbook.
To himself, to his own ego. Well, I joked about this behind the scenes with people, but now that I don't think it will ever be possible, I think he could have been the UFO disclosure president if you just told him, like, listen, man, if you tell the world about UFOs, like, we're talking Mount Rushmore level shit. We're talking face on a dollar bill level presidency, Donald. You know, this is Trump. The Trump name will live forever as the guy who told the truth about UFOs. He'll be like up there with Lincoln, dude. I think he absolutely would. I think he would have done it in a heartbeat. But I mean, seriously. If you presented him with that scenario and he knew and he could confirm it somehow, he wouldn't even need to fucking confirm it. He would just blurt it out and be like, "They told me UFOs are real." So that would have been my pitch to him if anyone actually got the chance to talk to him about UFOs.
Yeah. Well, how would that advance his agenda, though?
His agenda of being of his name. You know, his ego.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
It would just feed his ego in the most. You can't get much bigger than that. Feeding some, you know, you're going to be on par with Lincoln for revealing the UFO secret. I think that would be.
It's not like he's got any credibility to squander.
Yeah, he would have had to do it like right away. It's too late now. Now everyone would be like, "Now you're really fucking crazy, man." Like nobody would believe him. So what are you going to do now? Write another book?
Well, I'm going to push this book for a while.
Of course.
What I'd like to do is find places to speak. You know, find conferences or, you know, the UFO conferences still exist. They're still around, but there's not enough UFO material connected to Trump to do a decent talk. I'd like to somehow revive the conspiracy world, you know, the conspiracy.
Well, the thing is it's ironic that you say that because it's I noticed this like after the election where it's like the conspiracy community they thrive on being disenfranchised. Like they thrive on being pushed aside. They thrive on being kept out of the channels of power. And with the Trump election, it's like a lot of the people that followed that tune, I think, are kind of like not sure where to go, in a sense. And that's kind of why they latch on to some of these things like Pizzagate and the Democratic kid who got shot. And they say, like, they try and, like, harbor up these little tiny conspiracies because they don't really know. They can't rage against the machine because they created this machine.
Well, yeah, that's why, you know, that's why I try to get the discussion going along the lines of, like, you know, Trump is not actually a conspiracy theorist, no more than Jesse Ventura ever was.
Right.
There's a conspiracy to liberty. You know, they're using it part of a profile. And but, you know, the real job then for the people who are interested in parapolitics is to figure out what the real conspiracies are going on with Trump, you know, and expose those.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, I think one of the things that undercut conspiracy people now is that there's a one about Russia. You know, it's a conspiracy theory that all the media is buying. You know, finally acceptance for a conspiracy. Not so much that Trump has all of his conspiracy theories, but that there's one about, you know, collusion with the Russians that the media won't deny.
And so what do you think I'm falling for? Something here that is a second conspiracy.
Yeah.
I think so too. That's we worked this out like a therapy session tonight on the show where it's like, wait a minute. Something, I mean, they wouldn't, like I said, it doesn't make sense. I asked myself, is it like because, like, maybe, like, is there different, like, things that, what you have to like back engineer it, like what caused the different things, and maybe there's something different about this where it's like this was caused by someone outside the country and maybe the other events were caused by people, Americans conspiring. Is that the line that was been crossed here where it's like it's cool if Americans kill Americans? That's what the Civil War was all about, but you know, we can't have Russians coming in here and causing trouble.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm confused.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of the whole point of the book, was it was really just to review the history so that we could anchor whatever happens.
On a shared reality, yeah.
Yeah. Anchor it on the experiences that we've had so far with this guy.
Oh, good luck. What's been the reception? Oh, when that guy shot all those people, you put on Facebook that you heard that he had a copy of your book. Was that a joke or was that, like, real that you heard that?
No, I did hear that. I'm trying to remember now. Childress.
What's that?
David Childress told me that.
Where the fuck did he hear that?
He was probably just making it up, trying to get me excited about the book. You know, it actually, there's a certain irony there. I mean, I would at once be horrified and delighted at the idea.
Yeah, I know. I know the feeling, yeah. When I see one of these nuts do something nutty, I'll, if their Facebook profile's still up, I'll look and I'll be like, I'll just try and make sure they weren't a fan of my show. Or it's like, I really don't want, you know, the guy that killed all those kids to be a subscriber to Banal America.
I've had a situation like that. You know, when I was doing Steam Shovel, I never solicited advertising, but I had many advertisers that would come to me, right? And the only time I ever solicited an ad was I was flying to New York one time, and I was reading USA Today. Actually, I was quoted in USA Today. There's a picture of me. And from right across from that, there was a huge full-page ad for the next stage in human evolution, and it was this long rant. And I thought, you know, this guy's got money. He's taking full-page ad out in USA Today. I bet he'd pay for an ad Steam Shovel. So the one time I never solicited an ad, I wrote to these people, and it turned out to be Marshall Applewhite.
Oh, wow. Holy shit, dude.
And, in fact, Steam Shovel got in the news because, you know, when Heaven's Gate happened, they talked about how this guy had been taking ads out of different places, and one of them was Steam Shovel Friend.
That's fucking awesome. Holy shit. Dude, I love you, man. That's awesome. Wow.
I don't know what to think about that.
You're like a whirling dervish. You're like a Forrest Gump of fucking creepy history.
Yeah, you know, I don't really tell these stories actually with pride.
Well, it's too late now. You should be proud of them. Fuck. Wow. That's amazing. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I had some correspondence with it. Actually, to get the ad, I had some correspondence with Applewhite, too.
No. I take it you didn't mention how they planned on killing themselves when the comic came out, right?
No, they didn't reveal the whole master plan to me. You know, back at that time when I was first doing this stuff, it was, you can imagine writing what I'd write. I've run into a lot of nuts.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I haven't empowered them as much as I did Applewhite, so.
Oh, yeah. This field is rife with, like, really interesting characters. Most of them good. A lot of them crazy, you know.
Yeah, well, no, actually only two people.
Thankfully, only like a handful that are dangerous.
I learned early on to use a post office box. Before I learned that, I only had two people show up at my doorstep. One of them was just this guy driving across the country, old retiree guy. We would sit and chat. We went out and had a coffee. The other guy is still a friend of mine. He's a gunman. You know, I've gone out to the gun range with him. He used to show up at my gigs with guns to protect me. He was my bodyguard.
Oh, my God.
This went on for years. And this went on for years until he was put into a mental. We still go to dinner. You know, he had a period. He was, you know, he got his depression overtook him, and he had a period in the hospital. But occasionally go to dinner. So that's the worst. That outside of a lot of very strange conversations at the book selling table.
Yeah,
I think that's the worst that ever happened to me. I was really more taken by friends and creative people that spurred me on. You know. We used to have quite a community.
Well, we're out there, man. You got to get on Twitter and shit. You got to get with the new millennium, brother.
Well,
no, I think Donald Trump, to throw it back to Trumpocalypse Now, which you can get on Amazon, is that, you know, like he said the other day, people say his tweeting is unpresidential, but he says it's modern-day presidential. So you got to get with how the president talks to the people now.
Are those in the public domain, do you suppose, his Twitters? His tweets?
Yeah, they're part of like the government record.
You know, you could probably collect a bunch of them and put them in a printed volume and sell them.
I'm sure that you could absolutely collect them and you could absolutely sell them. Mm-hmm. So you and I should sell them. I'll be your co-writer and we'll just take them off. We'll do no actual writing just so I can say I wrote a book so my mom will leave me alone.
Well, you know, there's one of the other books that Chillis has just produced is nothing but the patents for mind control devices that were taken from the patent office. The book has no narrative, nothing. It's just those patents. And it's a big, thick book, and it's selling well, you know. There's no writing in it at all. It's just,
oh, that sounds like that museum in L.A. I forget the name of it now. My Paramaniacs Will Kill Me. It's like that weird museum. It's like not really a museum. It's like a performance art almost. Jurassic Technology, the Museum of Jurassic Technology.
Well, we used to have a museum of questionable medical devices here, and it had an Orgone box.
Oh, nice. Well, it's a strange. Oh, I didn't ask you about Dylan and the Nobel Prize. What did you think of that whole thing? I thought it was pretty awesome that he got the award and shit, but it was.
I wasn't impressed. I kind of felt the same way about the Dylan felt, you know. Okay, Nobel Prize. It's not going to go to the top of my calendar. I got other things to do. And then you saw what happened after he gave the speech, right? Apparently, he cribbed a lot of the speech from some kind of cliff notes.
Offline.
I thought that was fucking A. I love that. I love that.
An online cliff notes.
Yeah. That, I think, was just marvelous. But everything else is, you know, he doesn't say it, but I'm sure he thinks a lot of this is really, you know, pretentious stuff. You know?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, it's funny.
There's so many more powerful things on stage than except the Nobel Prize. It's got to be come down, really.
Absolutely. I was struck by to be the old man who yells at cloud now. It was like I was struck by. I read, because you know how it was the whole drama that unfolded, that he won the award and he wouldn't accept it for like 2 weeks, and then he finally did because they couldn't get a hold of him. He was like, they made it into a huge drama and shit. And I saw people like posting online that it was like, yeah, man, he's kind of being a drama queen. He needs to just accept the award and shit. He's, you know, he's being entitled. It's like, dude, that's fucking Bob Dylan, man. Like, you gave him an award. Like, leave him, like, that's such, that's like thirsty fandom. It's like, you just want to meet Bob Dylan, dude. We're not fooled by you, Nobel Committee. Like, if I had the power, I would do it too.
Well, that might have all been stage managed by his agents, too. I mean, it's that publicity, you know, good or bad, it gets you in the news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our mutual friend Greg Bishop does not like Dylan at all. He's not a Dylan fan. I thought you were like his mentor. How did you not turn him on to the Church of Bob?
Oh, no. Greg has the... Oh, I won't say anything.
What's that?
I was thinking about Greg. Greg likes old UFO songs from the 50s, you know?
He does have a unique musical palette. I'll give him that.
That's not his thing. If you're into Dylan, you got to be into songwriting, not really into UFOs. If you're into UFOs, the kind of songs that appeal to you are going to be kitschy, 50-ish, that kind of stuff. It has nothing to do... That's the thing about Dylan. The real genius of Dylan is that he's just the greatest songwriter to write a song.
Like I said before, it's like he runs the gamut of different genres. That's what makes him so good. Like you can go from one era to another, and they're completely different styles of music. He just gives you just enough for each different style and then moves to another one. And it's, to me, that's what's like... so genius about his work.
I think what's really cool about the current thing is that he can keep it up. I mean, this whole idea of reinventing yourself, you know, we all have to do it at some point or another in our lives. Most of the time we have to reinvent ourselves when our lives fall apart. But, you know, he's kind of proactive about it.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, at the age of 70-plus, whatever he is now, finding a whole new area to explore. So,
no, I agree.
If you don't like this period, you know it's got to be over soon.
That's a great part.
And you know he hasn't stopped writing songs either. You know, while he's been releasing all these covers, he's got a whole new notebook of projects.
I hope so. That's what I'm hoping, yeah. And then he's going to roll out a fucking awesome album of originals soon. That's kind of what I'm hoping, yeah.
Yeah.
But he is the best, man. To me, it's like... the Nobel Prize kind of like sealed the deal. It was like, I know it means kind of like bullshit in a lot of ways, but it was like, that put him on a tier above everyone else. It was like Tom Brady winning that last Super Bowl. It was like, it was, you know, it confirmed that he was the very best.
Yeah, I wonder if my attitude might be like his own, you know. I mean, he's Bob Dylan. giving him a Nobel Prize doesn't put him above that because he's already Bob Dylan. I wonder if he feels that way.
I can't even imagine what he thinks.
No.
You know?
Have you ever seen his house in Malibu?
What's that?
Have you ever seen his house in Malibu?
No, no. I'd love to.
Oh, it's great. It's great. There's a big gold turret. It's on a cliff overlooking Malibu.
Oh, nice. I haven't seen him actually live like in 6 or 7 years, I think.
Yeah.
I saw him one time. It's like my only really like good Dylan story in a sense, where it's like I saw him. He played in Boston for 3 nights at a nightclub, and I saw him all. I went to all 3 nights, and he played like the song lists were different all 3 nights, and he played maybe like 3 songs twice. So in total, he played like 60 to 65 songs. It was like
Rolling Thunder thing.
No. This was like fucking 2003.
Oh, okay.
So, but it was just the sheer array of songs that he played. It was like, holy shit, dude. You know, you walked out of there from the 3 days and you were like, I just heard a box set of live music from this guy.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't see the same concert 3 nights in a row at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's certainly within what he does. You know what? I'm from a time when if you wanted to get a Dylan concert recording, you had to sneak in a cassette player.
Yeah.
Remember these old C6s that we used to try to get in and make recordings? Nowadays, if you want to see Dylan at any point, you just dial him up on the web.
Oh, God, you can probably find – I bet you could find every concert he's given in the last 10 years at least audio form online.
Yeah, and you know –
if
know
you looked hard enough. Like, it's not like something you can just do on Google, but I bet you – if you go to the Dylan Underground, you can find all of those concerts, the audio for them. So careful that.
I know. It's a shame. I have a huge amount of concerts. I guess they're all on CDs up there now. Total waste of space. You can find it all online. It's like everything this is another old age lament. Everything that you've spent your life keeping close to you and collecting.
Now it's all digitized and online. Yes, I grew up loving wrestling, and I would tape every big wrestling show I would have on VHS tape. And now for $10 a month, I can get all of that entire tape collection available to me digitally without having to keep it in a bookshelf in my house.
That's through your books, that's through your record collection, video collection, everything. You know, if you've got junk in your house, you don't need it. You know, all you need is a computer and a very large screen.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people still like the artifacts. And actually, there's a big market for things like, you know, vinyl is big now. What's his name? Jack White.
Yeah.
Is really big he's got a lot of vinyl collectors. He releases his stuff on vinyl. And it's kind of a throwback nostalgia thing for people who have money to burn.
Oh, Ken, if you think that's crazy, you got to, like, get on the Google and Google. You know what's popular now, actually, is actually the cassette tapes.
Cassettes? Really?
Cassettes are back. Yep. Somehow cassettes are cool, and that's the way music should be heard, on cassettes.
That's amazing.
I'm telling
you,
dude, Google it. You'll see. It's like a whole hipster revolution where it's like, I want my tapes on cassettes.
You know, I just had an Elvis Costello fan give me a couple of USB devices that I can plug right into my dashboard in my car. And it's like live Elvis Costello from the past several years. Literally dozens of hours of tapes. And it's all on a USB plug. And I can play it in my car, you know?
Yeah.
We're living in a golden age in many ways.
Yeah. We talked about this before, actually. You inspired me because you said that you had the entire Dylan library on your phone. And I went and did that, too.
Yeah.
It's awesome to have.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Shit like that is cool. But, like, if you think about it, but we won't make it that far, probably, because it'll take another, like, 20 years. But someday, like, all – like I said, like, the last 10 years, people have been taping this shit, probably, like, pirating these recordings. And, like, in the distant future, maybe not, like, in the next 10 years, maybe 25 years, like, Dylan will be long gone. You and I will be long gone. And it's like they'll – that generation will be able to listen to all that shit. They will have it all, like, digitized. you know, if they don't blow themselves up before that happens.
Well, you know, my when I study this problem, $300 problem, I keep thinking about how do potential creators monetize it. You know, there, somebody came up with this great idea of taking all Jim Keith's old zines. Remember, I don't know if you've ever read Jim Keith, but he used to do a zine called Dharma Combat. And somebody said, some good-hearted person wanted to scan them all and put them up online and make them all available for free. And he got the permission from Jim. Jim was my writing partner for the Odyssey.
Yeah.
And he got permission, and Jim's been bad news, but he got permission from Jim's daughters. And I tried to talk them out of it because it's not for free. If you put it up online, the money that people pay for it goes to the ISP, you know?
Yeah.
To the internet service provider. If you instead of putting it online for, quote, free and make money for those people, you make it into a book and sell the book, maybe the money could go to Keith's daughter. But, you know, if people think I'm an old crank when I come up with ideas like this. Oh, come on, man. Information is supposed to be free.
Oh, God. That's the whole thing, yeah. Well, this whole field is beset with that problem in a sense. And you've been around a lot longer than I have, but it's like there's this twisted perspective on things where people are saying, or they say that, like, you know, it's for the greater good, man. Why are you charging for this, man? Aren't you a freedom fighter? Aren't you a truth seeker? It's like, fuck you, dude. Like, this, you have a job. Like, you're demanding shit for free. Like, this is my job.
I am sympathetic with that point of view. Everything should be free, but it isn't. But even though it might look free to you, but somebody's making money off of that somewhere, and it should be the creator.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, yeah, that's true, too. Yeah. If they're like, oh, this book costs too much, like, I get $2 from it. It's like, that's bullshit in and of itself.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
The economy of the paranormal is bad. You know, that's always been a problem.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of stuck for my next project. Like I said, I want to explore some of these on-demand presses to see if that can go anywhere. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that comes with a second job, another job that I don't mind, and that is promotion.
Yeah, I know. Well, you're on this show, so now what more promotion do you need to do?
Okay, I
want you to do all the shows, but nothing will compare to this conversation, I think.
No, this was a really freewheeling one. I liked it.
Yeah. Like I said, man, we don't have any rules on the show. It's all good time.
And no commercials either, you know, because half the time I go on these shows and I'm spending half the time listening to their damn commercials where you come on, and then whoever's the host takes up half of the program segment, and then I get to say one or two sentences and boom, another line of commercials.
Yeah.
I don't do them too frequently.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like I said, I've been out of it for forever. This is only the second interview I've done in maybe 3 years.
Well, I appreciate that you came on the show, brother. I really do.
Yeah. Great fun. No, I'm glad it was you. Somebody
like I said before, we don't have any rules on this show. I don't care. You know, I'm doing it on a cordless telephone from like 1995. So
well,
when you asked me earlier, like, what I want to do differently, it's like I want to develop like a studio. I want to have like my own like place to record the show, not where I'm walking around on my cell phone. So because but the thing is, I don't feel sad because that's what this show is. You know what I mean? The show is supposed to be dispatches from the underground. This is supposed to be like what you talk about with the celebrities who dip their toe in the paranormal and conspiracy theory and shit like that. It's like, no, this is the real shit. This is like people actually talking on the fucking phone. And when you listen to the show, you hear them talking on the phone because that's how it used to be. That's how these conversations used to take place, not over Skype and stuff.
Well, yeah, that's great. To have a conversation like this is really fabulous because, like I said, in the other kinds of shows, you have to come up with canned copy. Because you don't get that much time. So you have to make your points. And so we don't get to have a kind of a rolling conversation like we're having here, you know.
Well, that's what makes us the best. So.
Yeah.
All right. Where can folks find the new book?
Amazon. And, you know, I've got a stack of them as long as they last. Anybody wants a signed copy, K23Thomas@yahoo.com. Also, the other day, I found a box of books in my basement conspiracy books. I put a list up.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, so anybody wants those should tell me before I send them to the Value Village. I would love to give...
You said earlier about how it's hard to find a place to talk and shit. It's like that. I think part of it might be that the community split. It's like, what are you going to do? You have to have a pro-Trump conference or an anti-Trump conference.
Yeah, we probably didn't really do a good job of putting in a pro-Trump side. There is some of that in the book.
I know, but I'm saying is, like, that's – I talked earlier about, you know, JFK, 9/11. It's like the Trump thing is that's the line, folks. They're trying to put you on one side of the line or the other, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Essentially. It's like, are you someone who believes this all happened how it did, or you believe this, or all these different conspiracy theories, but there's a very red line there across that. And we should all start to think, why would they do that?
Okay.
Thank you very much, Ken. I really do appreciate it. And I will talk to you soon.
Can people access this? You going to send me a link or something to, or was it just a link?
Yes. When the show ends, then it goes up on Blog Talk. But give me like a couple days, and then I just take it and run it through the Banal America filter, just to put the music and shit in. And I don't take anything out. So I will send you a link in the next 2 days, and you can like trumpet, no pun intended, the episode.
All right, fabulous. Tim, it was very good talking to you.
Appreciate man, it was a pleasure. It was all my pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye. All right, folks, there you go. That was Ken Thomas talking about Trumpocalypse Now. As I joked, I hope I did not lose 10 to 15% of my audience from that show. I think I was actually pretty fair and balanced, quite honestly. So, and for all the folks who were like, you never say what you think, I think I pretty much said what I think on this show. So hopefully it did not turn off too much of the audience. We'll be back next week. I don't have the guest yet for you, but I have a couple of folks that are just waiting to hear back from them. I expect no problems. I'll be going on vacation at the beginning of August, but hopefully we'll have something cool for you by then. Good night, folks. I'll talk to you next week.